Welcome back to the Roundtable. When talking to authors on the show, we regularly, or as we say in the States, regularly, hear them credit a book's success to the word of mouth from terrific independent booksellers. We put aside time each Tuesday to celebrate the region's independence and have them bring us to new places. Connie Brooks of Battenkill Books in Cambridge, New York, is here this morning with some wonderful suggestions. Connie, good morning. How are you?
I'm great.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Was it a pleasant, lovely holiday season for the bookstore?
It was. We were busy. It was our best holiday season yet, so we're tremendously pleased.
Every time I went in, it was just a beehive of activity.
Yes. And the beehive has not stopped. That's the crazy thing. I mean, it's not the pre-Christmas, really, it reaches insanity, but it's been busy. So we're even more hopeful about 2013.
Awesome. So, yeah. Wonderful, wonderful news. And with great books out, hey, plenty of opportunities and reason to visit your local independent and pick up some really wonderful literature that is out there. Where would you like to begin?
Well, there are some great books that are out. I wanted to start with a novel that's just out, and it's called The Death of Bees by Lisa O'Donnell. The Death of Bees is set in a housing estate in Glasgow, so kind of a rundown area in Glasgow in Scotland. And the story centers on two sisters, Marie and Nellie, who have just discovered their parents dead in their flat. But unlike, I guess, most people, they decide not to tell anyone and they want to shift for themselves.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Turns out that their parents were very neglectful of them to begin with. And the eldest sister has been the main caretaker for Nellie for years already. So their plan is they want to wait it out a year until Marie turns 16 and she can legally take care of them both. I warn everyone, some grim chapters follow. They have these two dead bodies in their flat and they're not quite sure what to do with them. So it's a really part grim, part humorous book. If that makes any sense.
Yep.
So they're by themselves. They figured out how to get rid of the bodies, and the new year comes and goes. And an elderly neighbor, an older man, notices that they're alone, and he kind of becomes part of their life, and they form this unique family, really. But of course, this can't go entirely unnoticed in the broader world for too long. Their friends start to ask questions, their teachers, the authorities get involved, and of course, you know, things start to unravel. I've heard the book compared to Swamplandia, if anyone out there has read that and
Karen Russell enjoyed
Swamplandia. And I've heard it said that if you read Gone Girl, this might be the next thing to pick up. The author, Lisa O'Donnell, says that she wrote it for a young adult audience. I've only had adults come in and pick up the book. And as Lisa O'Donnell said of her potential young adult audience, there are 15-year-olds and there are 15-year-olds. I wouldn't give this to every 15-year-old. It can be rather grim, but
yeah.
Any adult, I think you know, it's a great read. So
gotcha.
Next, I brought in another novel, and it's called The Drowning House by Elizabeth Black. And in The Drowning House, the main character, Claire, is a photographer whose once happy marriage is coming apart, unraveling under the strain of a family tragedy. In fleeing both her marriage and her grief, she accepts an invitation to direct an exhibition in her hometown of Galveston, Texas, to which she hasn't returned in a decade. Claire's quickly drawn back into her own past, as well as her family's complicated relationship with a wealthy and influential family, the Carradays. Her return immerses her in a century-old mystery involving Stella Carraday. Local legend has it that Stella drowned in the family's house during the great hurricane of 1900, hanged by her long hair from the drawing room chandelier.
Nice.
Could she have been saved, and what is the true nature of Claire's family's involvement? The mystery here lays as thick as the tragedy, and it's a very gripping read. It's one of those ones that you cannot put down.
Awesome. That's The Drowning House by Elizabeth Black, and that book has a great cover.
It is a great cover.
Really great cover.
Yes, the chandelier.
Yeah, just fantastic.
Yes. Continuing in my kind of dark vein this morning, I brought in, this is a paperback, and it's The Flight of Gemma Hardy by Margot Livesey.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
It's out in paperback. We're reading it for our book club in the store for February. The story, The Flight of Gemma Hardy, is kind of a riff or a retake on the well-worn tale of Jane Eyre, but it's set in Scotland in the 1950s and 1960s. And taken from her native Iceland to Scotland in the early 1950s, an orphaned young Gemma Hardy comes to live with her kindly uncle and his family, but his untimely death leaves Gemma under the care of her resentful aunt, and she suddenly finds herself an unwelcome guest. Soon she's sent away to Claypool, a strict private school where she learns as much about pure survival as she does book learning. Finally, just shy of 18, she must strike out alone in the world and takes the first position offered her as an au pair to the 8-year-old niece of the mysterious, strong-willed Mr. Sinclair on the remote Orkney Islands. And though the parallels, I think, to Jane Eyre are very distinct and they're kind of fun, you're like, oh, I know that scene in Jane Eyre. Gemma's very much her own character, and as I'm learning more about the book for book club, the author, Margot Livesay, she herself was orphaned at age 9, and she discovered Jane Eyre, and it brought her great relief as an orphan child growing up in Scotland. So she didn't just set out to kind of remake Jane Eyre. I think she can relate to the Jane Eyre story in very deep ways. It's a great book.
It is The Flight of Gemma Hardy by Margot Livesay. And next.
Next is someone I believe who's on the show tomorrow, Margaret Roach.
Yes.
Her new book is The Backyard Parables, Lessons on Gardening and Life. And we're actually doing an event with Margaret on March the 3rd. We're doing kind of a double header. So Margaret's going to come in the afternoon and she does this wonderful talk and slideshow on her garden. And then her friend, Katrina Kennison, and hers is the next book I have to talk about. They will then join forces and have a conversation together in this kind of doubleheader event that's on March 3rd. I know you already mentioned during the show today some of Margaret Roach's background. She worked for Martha Stewart Living as the first garden editor, and she went on to be the editorial director for Martha Stewart Living Omnimedia. She now writes gardens and has her own blog, which is called A Way to Garden. And in The Backyard Parables, Roach shares her collection of simple, instructive stories harvested from a life spent digging deep and reinventing her terrain. She weaves her observations of the natural world with the many challenges of knowing and tilling the same patch of earth for decades. Her own unique philosophy of life emerges, and her garden is revealed as both the teacher and a path to salvation. And it's wonderful, and we can't wait to welcome her to the store.
She'll be at the store on March 3rd. Margaret Roach, the book is The Backyard Parables, Lessons on Gardening and Life, and she'll be our guest on the program tomorrow at 11:30 right here live in Studio A. So we look forward to that as well. Now, the companion volume to that.
The companion, Katrina Kennison, is the author, and she's just written a book called Magical Journey, An Apprenticement in Contentment. Now, Kennison is the author of The Gift of an Ordinary Day, as well as Mitten Strings for God, Reflections for Mothers in a Hurry. She also, from 1990 until 2006, was the series editor of the Best American Short Stories. In her new memoir, Kennison writes of the inevitable changes brought on by time, a death of friends and loved ones, children leaving home, a recognition of her own physical vulnerability, and surprising shifts in her marriage. In some ways, her book reminds me of Anne Morrow Lindbergh's classic, A Gift from the Sea. Mm-hmm. But I see in Kennison's book more of the struggle that many women share, more of a wrangling with the changes that time brings, our shifting identities as children leave home and need us less, our fading physical beauty, and our spiritual searching. She finds solace in the notion that midlife is also a time of unprecedented opportunity for growth as old roles and responsibilities fall away. And she writes so warmly and intimately that the book really feels like a letter from a trusted friend.
Well, that sounds great.
It is great.
Excellent. All right. And all of this, you can find out details about all these events by going to batandkillbooks.com. Next.
This next pick is for all of the Downton Abbey and Upstairs Downstairs fans out there, of which I know there are many, and I count myself as one. And the book is Below Stairs, the classic kitchen maid's memoir that inspired Upstairs Downstairs and Downton Abbey by Margaret Powell. Margaret Powell grew up in England. Her father was a seasonally employed house painter, and her mother was a char lady. So she had little choice but to enter service as a young woman, and she did, beginning as a kitchen maid, which was considered the lowest of the low, in 1920. Now, her story was first published in 1968, became hugely popular in Britain, and ultimately paved the way for TV shows like Upstairs, Downstairs. Work started at 5:30 in the morning and lasted until well after dark. And despite the tales of drudgery, after all, her days were filled with stoves to be blacked, vegetables to be scrubbed, and endless laundry to be ironed. Powell's story also wisely and warmly tells the tale of her fellow servants below stairs, including managing masters and mistresses with strange penchants, raucous parties after hours, and heartbreakingly, tales of young women seduced by the wealthier set and sent away in disgrace. And this book was a little bit like The Help in its day, that after its release, all these people who employed servants came forward and said, oh, no, you know, I'm actually really nice to my servants. And she... she said, of course, there are wonderful, you know, individual people out there who are employers, but as a system, she was very angry at the system. She didn't see that there was any room for opportunity for someone to move up. And so you get all of that in Below Stairs.
Below Stairs, the classic kitchen maid's memoir that inspired Upstairs, Downstairs, and Downton Abbey, .. Margaret Powell is the author, and sounds cool.
Next is To Sell is Human, The Surprising Truth About Moving Others by Daniel Pink. And Pink he's had many best-selling books, include Drive, I think was the most recent. His premise here is that almost all of us are involved in the business of sales, even if we don't think of it that way. And if you look at the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, 1 in 9 Americans directly works in sales. But what he says is that the other 8 are also in the business of moving another's opinions in some way, perhaps by selling colleagues on a new idea, getting funding for a nonprofit, or as a parent or teacher cajoling children to study or behave in one way or another. So he kind of takes a fresh look at the science and the art of sales. He discards the idea of the stereotypical salesman, someone who's overwhelming and won't take no for an answer. And he claims that's outdated, it's irrelevant in this world. Instead, he analyzes the data and reveals that, for one thing, extroverts do not make the best salespeople. Extroverts don't know when to be quiet, whereas persuading nowadays has a lot more to do with listening. And the best salespeople or persuaders or influencers, whatever you want to call them, they know when to push their points, but they also know when to hold back.
All right, I buy that. Daniel Pink is going to be on our show, I believe, week after next.
Oh, great.
So we look forward to talking to him.
You can ask him some more about
introvert,
this. See if he'll convince
stuff.
You.
No, I'm convinced. finally.
Oh, I have time for one more. Heat.
Yes.
Heat, Adventures in the World's Fiery Places by Bill Streever. A few years ago, Bill Streever wrote the national bestseller Cold, Adventures in the World's Frozen Places. So now he returns with the Fiery Places. So I think clearly this is an author who's fascinated by extremes. And in the new book, Heat, he dares to ask what we actually really know about heat. So to research the book, he follows his curiosity, which leads him in many different directions. He walks on hot coals for the book to really understand what heat feels like. He visits Death Valley in the middle of summer. He investigates historical developments related to heat, such as historic fires, the invention of matches, the development of thermonuclear weapons. And he even goes within the body to examine intense fevers and heat stroke. So it's kind of the book is a combination of history, pop science, and his own personal experiences. Highly readable, and I just enjoy his curiosity. He's such a curious man, and you want to go along for the ride.
Bill Streever's Heat, Adventures in the World's Fiery Places. For more information on Bat and Kill Books, you can check out their website. It's batandkillbooks.com. Better yet, go visit them at 15 East Main Street in Cambridge, New York. It's a beautiful store and a wonderful, make a day of it.
Yes.
Here's our...
Absolutely.
In Cambridge and Greenwich, our tourism principle is come, spend a lot of money, and then go home.
Yes.
That's what we want.
We would love that.
For more information, go to batandkillbooks.com. You can find out about the very cool events on March 3rd with Margaret Roach and Katrina Kennison and much, much more. Batandkillbooks.com. Connie, you're the best. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks,
I appreciate
Joe.
It. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.